Good morning, CAMCC. Will you please stand with me this morning? We just want to welcome you this morning and let you know that we're here to participate together, to worship together, to lift up the name of the Lord this morning. Will you join me? I want to dance like David. I want to faith like Paul. I want to sing like Silas tearing down the prison walls. I want to face that fire. Won't burn me though. God's got my back, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. I want to walk like Moses, right through the waves. One day I'll see that promised land, no longer slaves. Though the fear is talking, no, I can't take out my faith. I'm gonna pray, I'm gonna pray. I praise the mountain, moving body, raising breaker of chains. I want a gift like Mary. I want to break my veins. I want to sleep like Daniel, leaving in a lion's den. Gonna get that promise, just like Jericho. Yeah, I know what I'll make it for. I'm gonna praise, I'm gonna praise. I'll praise the mountain, moving body, raising breaker of chains. Gonna praise, I'm gonna praise. I'll praise the heaven seated, undefeated heights, the name that you are. Praise, hey. I praise the God who's proven he can do impossible things. That you are. Praise, hey. That you are. Praise, that you are. Praise, let's sing it out, church. He is the Lion of Judah. He is the Lamb that was slain. The only one who's worthy, worthy, worthy of all of his names. Back to our praise. He is a risen Messiah. He is the Ancient of Days. The only one who's worthy, worthy, worthy of all of his names. Back to our praise. I'm gonna praise. I praise the mountain, moving body, raising breaker of chains. Gonna praise. I'm gonna praise. I praise the heaven seated, undefeated heights, the names that you are. Praise. Hey. I praise the God who's proven he can do impossible things. That you are. Praise. I want to love like Jesus, that kind of grace. I want to live like I've got no more precious time to waste. Gonna give him glory with all my things, cause there's no greater, stronger, higher name, and that's who I praise.
Praise you, Lord.
Let him turn into your favor. Watch him work it for your good. He's not done with what he started.
No, he's not.
He's not done until it's good. Let him turn it in your favor. Watch him work it for your good. Ooh. He's not done with what he started. No, he's not. He's not done until it's good. Hello, peace, hello, joy,
hello love, hello strength, hello hope, it's a new horizon, yes it is, hello peace, hello joy, hello love, hello strength, hello hope, it's a new horizon.
If you're ready for a break, stop being up and just receive, oh, what he's pouring out is nothing you've ever seen. You've ever seen, seen out. Hello.
Not my story, you are, let's sing it, church. Heartbreak's not my home, you are, death is not the end, you are,
fear is not my future, you are, sickness is not my story. You are, heartbreak's not my hope. You are, death is not the end, Jesus. You are, hello. Sickness not my story, you are. Heartbreak's not my home, you are. Death is not the end, Jesus, you are. You are.
Heavenly Father, thank you that this is not the end, Father. You are our future. You hold us in your hands, Father, and we believe that you died on the cross for our sins. We're going to sing this song out together just to declare it.
From the beginning, you've been unchanging. Age to age, you stay. Constant you remain, every mystery, the questions I carried, are safe within your will, so I trust you even still. You do what
Good morning. My name is Brandon. I'm one of the pastors here. And as we continue our time of worship, I want to invite you guys into a time of communion. You know, in the book of Luke, Jesus is sitting with his disciples, and we see him partake in communion with his disciples. And he takes the wine and he passes it around and he says, "Take this, as this represents my blood spilled for you." And then he breaks bread and hands it around to them and he says, "Now take this, as this represents my body which was broken for you." And this final instruction, he says, "Do this in remembrance of me." And what I love about this time is that it gives us an opportunity to truly remember what he's done for us. That the songs we just sang represent, and the words that we said were, there's no shame for us. That sin is not our identity. Fear is not our future. That we have a hope in Jesus. And so this time for you guys and for all of us is that it's a time to remember that we have victory in Jesus. That no matter what life may throw at us, no matter how much we've messed up, no matter how much we mess up, we have victory in Jesus. And so as you guys come forward, we have all of our communion material, our supplies here. And when you're done, you can dispose of them in these baskets up in the front. But my encouragement to you in this time is to remember the victory you have in Jesus. Remember the love he has for you, where he broke his body and he spilled his blood for your sake so that we would be right with him. So I want to invite you guys again to stand up. We're going to go right into our next song, but please come forward, take communion, and let's remember the goodness of the gospel.
Of exaltation.
We're going to try that again.
I am an instrument of exaltation, and I was born to lift your name above all names. You hear the melody of all creation, but there's a song of praise that only I can sing. Who else is worthy? Who else is worthy? There is no one, only you, Jesus. Who else is worthy? Who else is worthy? There is no one, only you, Jesus. You are the infinite God of the ages. Yet you choose your dwelling place. You heal my brokenness. Show me your glory. So I have song of things that even angels sing. Who else is worthy? Who else is worthy?
Thank you, Lord, for your nearness to us daily, daily.
How great thou art, how Hey, good morning. Welcome to Camarillo Community Church. We are so glad that you are all with us today. I'm going to take a special moment. I don't know if my son is here right now, but if you see him, Sebastian, it is his 16th birthday, and happy birthday to you, son. Believe it or not, 11 years ago that we adopted him now, or he first came into our house as a foster child. There has been, it's a journey, like they say, and he's had some highs and lows, but he's doing really well right now. And if you would do me a favor and just congratulate him when you see him on the patio today, that would be absolutely awesome. It would make me super happy, and it's a special day for him. I'd love to make it special for him. Hey, welcome to Camarillo Community Church. My name is David Hurtado. In case you don't know me, I'm new to you. You're new to me. Welcome. We're so glad that you're with us. You may be watching online, maybe because you had the traveling baseball team this weekend, so you're checking in on Wednesday. I don't know what it is. You're working, whatever it might be. We're glad that you're joining us as well. And all of us who are able to be here today, man, what a worship time it was this morning. This has been a special time already, and I'm super excited moving forward. You find yourself at a church where you put the Bible over everything, place ourselves underneath it. We want to be desirous of being welcoming of anyone, no matter where you are in your background, spiritually or not. And then we also want to make a community impact everywhere. We want to see community impact everywhere. We might not be the church for everybody. There's too many opinions in the world about what church should be, but these are things we're good at. And if you enjoy these things with us, man, we're going to have a lot of fun together. And that's the kind of church that we are. Now, some of you came in late this morning because it is Promotion Sunday. We want to make this a very special day. So all the littles went up a grade. So, some of you guys were downstairs and you're here late because you had to go upstairs. Your kids got, transported upstairs, and there's new teachers and all that kind of thing going on, and everybody in youth got moved up, and so from this day forward, whatever grade they were last week, now they're in a new grade higher. This is our transition point, and so we wanted to celebrate this with like a young family extravaganza. And so after church today, second hour, we're going to be doing something special. Promotion Sunday, Ninja Academy will be in the activity center for children. That's kind of like the TV show where you do all these five flying jumps and whatever. You can have your kid break their neck over next door. And so we'd like to invite you to that. And then for the littles, we have jolly jumps. And so please come. The littles probably shouldn't do the activity center, Ninja Academy stuff yet. And so we got them little jolly jumps. And then we're selling authentic tacos, not authentic tacos, authentic tacos for $10, and that will be a fundraiser to support our middle school ministry and their camp coming up. So come with some cash so you can get some authentic tacos made from our very own Jacob. He knows what it's all about. He's Hispanic himself. And so you're going to want some of that. So that's what we're doing this afternoon, family time extravaganza. Welcome. We're so excited for you. One more year, parents. You did it. You did it one more year, so we're proud of you. Hey, if I were to ask you a question like, where were you on some morning in September, let's say the year of 1990, let's go with 2001. Where were you on some September morning in 2001? Do you remember what you were doing? And you might say to yourself, what in the world are you talking about? How could anybody remember what they were doing some 20 plus years ago on some September morning? You're probably right. Now, some of you are also thinking, I wasn't even born yet. Well, it's easier for you then. You were doing nothing. You weren't even here yet. But for those of us who are a little older and remember that timeline, I don't know what I was doing some September morning. Well, that's a good point. I don't know how anybody could remember that, but I would tell you this. I can remember what I was doing on a Tuesday morning in September on the year 2001. And the reason I can remember that is because I was a student in seminary, and what I did every Tuesday was the exact same thing. Tuesday mornings were the morning before I would have my Greek quiz in seminary. And so I would wake up at 4 a.m. in the morning, and I would study for this quiz. I'd take a shower, study for hours, and then I'd have to be in La Mirada at about 11 a.m. for my Greek class. I'll never forget that season of my life because Greek was literally the most academically intensive subject that I've ever taken in my life, past, present, future. There's nothing harder than I had to, the amount of time and energy in academics than it was in that Greek class. So I could tell you for certain, I know what I was doing every Tuesday on September of 2001. In fact, the whole fall, that's all I was doing, memorizing, studying. For some of you who are nocturnal, you won't understand this, but there are some of us in the world who believe that nothing good happens after 10:30 p.m. at night. Like our minds are good for nothing. My brain is like jello. It just floats back and forth. I can get nothing done after 10:30. But for some reason, when I wake up at 4 a.m. in the morning and I would study, it's quiet. There's no distractions. There's nothing on TV. Nobody's trying to talk to me. The birds chirp beautifully. It's dark and it turns to light. Something about that. My eyes wake up and I am ready to go. My best hours of the day to study are early, early, early in the morning. And so I would wake up early and find that I could utilize that to my advantage, especially when I was taking Greek. Now, that being the case, the serenity that I feel in the morning, but to compound matters, was also a Tuesday that will live in infamy for our country. 2001, September 11th, around 6:15 a.m., I had a roommate wake up and said, "Have you heard? America's under attack." I said, "What? What are you talking about? I've been up since 4 a.m. We're not under attack." And then we turn on the TV, and sure enough, about 9:03 Eastern time, 6:03 West Coast time, the second airplane had crashed into the second World Trade Center tower in New York. I don't think I'll ever remember that morning. It was quite unprecedented. Turned on the TV. In fact, we were glued to the TV for the next several weeks. How would America respond? What would we do? I remember maybe a week or two later, the president of the United States at the time, George W. Bush, going down to Ground Zero, which is what we call the area where the buildings had fallen. He was trying to encourage the worker and the rescue workers who were there, trying to find anybody who might still be alive in the rubble. President Bush said, as he was talking with a silly megaphone, one of the people in the crowd yelled out, "I can't hear you." And he responded off the cuff, and in a moment, just coming whatever top of his head, he says, "Well, I can hear you, and the rest of the world hears you, and the people who knocked down these buildings will hear from all of us soon." To a great amount of applause, as people cheered, something positive in the midst of something that was so difficult and negative. You know, for a man who struggled throughout his political career, at least, was thoroughly criticized for his inability to find the right words at the right moments, fumbling over his words over and over again. You can find reels of it online even today. In an off-the-cuff moment, at an unprecedented period, he sure found the right words to say then. Where do we turn when that which is unprecedented happens in our lives? Both in the high times and even in the low times. What do we turn to? What brings us hope? When the unprecedented happens in our lives, how should we respond? This morning, we're taking a look at our next installment in the series of 2 Samuel. We'll look at verses 1 through 7 this morning, and we'll come upon an unprecedented moment in the history of the nation of Israel. And then we will follow how David responds in the midst of that unprecedented moment. What is the first thing on his mind as he encounters the unprecedented? What is his guiding light when it comes to his actions? Where does he run for help, and who does he model his actions after? And when we come upon unprecedented seasons of our life, maybe you're in one right now, that's why you're at church today, I don't know. Where do we turn to? Where do we turn our hearts and our minds to? How should we move forward in our actions? For that, we're going to be in 2 Samuel. I'd love for you to turn in your Bibles right now to 2 Samuel chapter 2. If you're new to our church, this is our rhythm. We pick a book and we go through it. I don't feel like I'm that fancy on coming up with topics, and so we just teach whatever the next thing says. And so we're looking at verses 1 through 7 of 2 Samuel chapter 2. We have to remember the whole history of 1 Samuel, which we went through about a year and a half ago, and now we're in 2 Samuel. And the time of the judges is the time where God is king over Israel. And of course, the people are looking around going, well, everybody else, other countries have their own king, and he's beautiful and he's pretty and he protects them. And God's like, I protect you. I'm beautiful and pretty. No, we don't want you. We want our own human king. And so God gives into that, gives them a human king. And 1 and 2 Samuel is all about what happens when you prefer a human king versus what we call, forgot the word for it. But anyway, instead of God being king, theocracy, that's the word. And so that's what's documented there, and we're seeing it happen. First Samuel was about Saul and his kingdom. Saul comes to an end, the end of First Samuel, and the first chapter in Second Samuel. And now we're going to watch the installment of David and how his kingship goes. Starts off well, has some iffiness in the middle, but ends well for him as well. And the overarching question today is, how might we successfully navigate through unprecedented seasons in life? David finds himself in an unprecedented season. There was a king. We never had a king before. He's dead. Who's going to be the new king? Unprecedented. Where do we go? Is it my turn? He's been waiting 15 years. 15 years ago, Samuel anointed him as king, but he hasn't been king for 15 years. Is now the time? I don't know. How might we navigate, or how might we successfully navigate through unprecedented seasons of life? The first thing we're going to see is that you might let your initial response be to seek the Lord. Let your initial response be to seek the Lord. How might we do this? Well, let's let our initial response be to seek out God. I want you to see this in verses 1-4. After this, David inquired of the Lord. You can circle that part, underline that, highlight it in some way. Shall I go up to any of the cities of Judah? And the Lord said to him, go up. And David said, which one shall I go up to? And he said, to Hebron. And so David went there and his two wives with him, Ahinoam, I don't know, but I would just prefer you didn't do that to your daughter, of Jezreel, and Abigail, the widow of Nabal of Carmel. Abigail's a little better. And David brought up his men who were with him and everyone with his household, and they lived in the towns of Hebron. And the men of Judah came up, and there they anointed David king over the house of Judah. Okay, so how might you navigate the unprecedented seasons of life? Well, let your first response be, your initial response be, your best response be to seek out the Lord. That's what David does. This is unprecedented because we have a king. We've never had one before. He didn't exactly like bring up a successor because he felt threatened by anybody who could succeed him. That's why David's been on the run. And so what do we do now that the king is dead and his three sons die with him? Who succeeds the king? Well, David could go, well, I was anointed 15 years ago. This must be the time. It seems like he's learned some things along the way, and he said to himself, you know what? I'm going to inquire of the Lord before I move forward. Like I said, Saul has passed away. His three legitimate sons are dead as well. I say legitimate because they're birthed from his wife. There are two other sons that are birthed by a concubine. They'll come into the picture later in the chapter as we go next week. But his three legitimate sons who would have a right to the throne have passed away. Saul himself has passed away. And this means that David can now move about freely without anybody trying to kill him. You remember, he has run into enemy territory, pretending like he's a madman, according to 1 Samuel, going to Gath, and he's staying at Ziklag, which is a Philistine territory. If I can surround myself with enemy forces, Saul won't come in and try to kill me. But now that Saul's dead, David can go anywhere he wants. There's nobody out to get him. So he says to himself, where should I go? According to 1 Samuel chapter 16, he's waited 15 years for this moment, and he's asking, is now the time? And he says that he inquires of the Lord. When we see that phrase in other places, that usually means they get the high priest who wears a vest, and he uses the Urim and Thummim to figure out what God's will is. In fact, that's why I decided to wear this vest today. Imagine a high priest wearing a vest. Imagine if there was a pocket on the inside with two stones, a stone that's light and a stone that's dark. And the idea was this was a God-sanctioned way to, in real time, find out the will of God. And you could ask of God yes or no questions, and by the process of elimination, you could know what God's will is for your situation. So it could go something like this. David brings Abiathar, who's the high priest, says, come on over, wear the ephod. I have to ask God some questions. Should I leave Ziklag now? Puts his hand in the pocket, takes it out, white stone, yes. Puts it back in there, shakes it up a little bit. Which city should I go to? That's not a good question because that doesn't work. You need yes or no. Should I go to San Francisco? No. Do I go to Hebron? Yes. And that's the idea of how David would know the will of God. And so he says, you know what? Before I just run into this, I'm going to get the high priest. We're going to ask questions of God. I'm going to inquire of the Lord before I move forward. Now, this is a little bit of a change of pace for him in a sense. He's done this in the past, but there's one time that he didn't do it. It's like he corrected his own, he departed from his own last move here. The last time he went running into Philistine territory, thinking that he's got an idea of how he could protect himself, he didn't inquire of the Lord, and he used enemies to secure himself rather than allowing the Lord to secure himself. And he says, I'm going to make a change here. This time I'm going to actually do it God's way. I'm going to actually run towards God in the process. And hopefully that's super encouraging to you because maybe there's been times in your life where you went the wrong way and now this time I want to do it right. This time I want to inquire of the Lord. I want to see if there's anything in the scriptures that might help me with this decision that I'm making. You know, I am so supremely amazed and surprised, even could say alarmed, about how many things I can do in life without inquiring of God. Like the decisions that I make on a regular basis without going to prayer, and even significant ones. Like if I'm just honest with you, there are many decisions where I probably should have paused and waited and asked God and prayed it through and waited for his answer. And my guess is if I can say that as a pastor, that maybe a lot of you would go back in your life and say, you know what, there's been a lot of those for me too. Is buying this home the wisest thing to do at this time, right now? Is this parenting strategy the best one for this child at this moment, right now? Is that what they need or is that not what they need? Is buying the 75-inch TV a good use of my money when the 65-inch TV still works? Don't pray about that one. I'll save you the effort. Give me your 75-inch TV. Well, David inquires of the Lord, and through a process of elimination, he finds out that God has told him to go to Hebron. David takes his mighty men and himself and his family, his wives included, and they go to Hebron, where the elders of the Judean area of Judah come to David and install him as king. Now, there are just recognizing the fact that in the past, God has already recognized David as king and anointed him as king through Samuel. But they are saying, we are now making you king of our people, the southern region of Israel. This is really the beginning of what we would call the southern kingdom and the northern kingdom. We'll see that a little bit next week as well. But the southern region has now said, David, you're going to be our king. Now, there may be some people who are wondering, David, what side are you on? I mean, we know you're of Israeli descent. You're running away from Saul, but you're living with the Philistines. You were even a mercenary for them for a while. So you just came out of Ziklag, which is a Philistine territory. So are you on their side or are you on our side? Well, here he makes it clear by moving into Hebron, the southern region of Israel. He is making it 100% clear that he's with Israel. Hebron is an interesting city. It's really the capital of David's kingdom for the first 7.5 years that he would serve as king. It's 20 miles southwest of Jerusalem. It's one of the largest cities in that region that he could take refuge in, but it has some other strategic, political, and even spiritual things that would make sense for him to move there. First, it was the place where their forefather Abraham had lived for many years, according to Genesis chapter 13. It's the land that Caleb would receive, which is David's tribe, after the wilderness wanderings, according to Judges chapter 1. It was set aside for the Aaronic priesthood, the priesthood through the line of Aaron. It was set aside for those people. And you got to remember that Abiathar is with David as the high priest, who is from the Aaronic priesthood line. And so there's a lot of things that make sense about this. It's his own tribe's territory. It's the land of the priesthood. I had this priest just tell me that God's will was to go this direction. David married a woman who was a widow of a Calebite. She's having a homecoming, so to speak, as they go back to Hebron. David's own hometown of Bethlehem is nearby. And the city was specifically set aside. This is the one I want to kind of camp out on. The city was specifically set aside for those who were falsely accused of murder. Now, think of it. You can imagine the rumor mill going around. Well, David's wanting to be king for 15 years. And now Saul ends up dead. Was it the Pharisees? I mean, the Pharisees. Was it the Philistines? Or was it David? I bet you David killed Saul. That way he could get the kingdom. And here, God's calling David to move to a city that's known to be a refuge for people who have specifically been accused of murder when they haven't done it. So David moves there with more, 600 to 1,000 people with him. And so it's not a small party that goes there. But what we see in the midst of an unprecedented series of events that would lead to this uncertainty for all of Israel. Now, there was a king, he's dead. Who's the new king? 3 sons died. Well, David was anointed as king, but he's been living with the Philistines and being hired as a mercenary. Now, he never attacked any Israeli territories, but still, he's on our side, he's on that side. What unprecedented times. What does David do in times of uncertainty? In an unprecedented time, David shows how we should all respond. To seek out the will of God. Seek out what God's will is for your life. Should I date him or should I date her? Have you prayed about it? What university should I choose? Or maybe the best thing for me is to take a gap year. Have you prayed about it? Have you asked others to pray with you? Should I marry him or should I marry her? Should I remarry? Like, is it time for me to remarry? Have you prayed about it? Have you asked God? And by the way, if you're on your 4th or 5th marriage, you might try to pray on this one. I don't know anybody who's on their 4th or 5th marriage, so if you are, I'm not specifically talking to you, but it still applies. We see from David that in these times, where you feel like you're at a crossroads, so I go this way, right or left, which way do I go? Ask the Lord. Like, make it a habit, so I'm going to get God involved in this. The scriptures say that you'll delight yourself in the Lord and he will give you the desires of your heart. Now, people mistake that and think that means that, well, if I delight myself in God, he'll give me what I want. No, no, no. If I delight myself in God, then the very desires that are in my heart, I can assume are from him. He transforms my desires through that prayer. I don't know how many of you guys thought that this is direction, this is direction, this is direction, and then you pray about it and God changes. In fact, I have a son today because my wife and I went through a prayerful time where we said, you know what? We think that natural childbirth is too difficult for us and maybe God hasn't called us to that, but we still believe that God has called us to have a household with 4 children. Maybe we should adopt. Prayer has the ability to change the desires of the heart. And I believe those desires, according to the scriptures, can be coming straight from God when you're delighting in him. You see, when you're delighting in him, you're not just assuming, you're not just greedily asking for what you want. When you're delighting in him, abiding in him, you're saying, I want what you want for my life more than anything else in my life. Give me that and I'm happy with it. More so than I'm happy with my 75-inch TV that I'm still praying that one day God will give me. How might we successfully navigate through the unprecedented seasons of life? Well, first, you might try and devote yourself to inquiring of the Lord. Now, secondly, we might let our own actions model God's faithfulness. I want you to see this, that David's own actions models a faithfulness of God as he moves forward. I'm going to ask God, inquire of him, and then I'm going to move in the very heart of God, the very faithfulness of God. I want you to see this in verses 4-9. It says this, and when they told David that it was the men of Jabesh Gilead who buried Saul, David sent messengers to the men of Jabesh, whatever, and said to them, Maybe, may you be blessed by the Lord because you showed this loyalty to Saul, your Lord, and you buried him. And now may the Lord show steadfastness to you in love and faithfulness. And I will be good to you as well because you have done this thing. Now, therefore, let your hands be strong and be violent. For Saul, your Lord, is dead, and the house of Judah has anointed me as king over them. How might we successfully navigate through unprecedented seasons of life? Well, you might let your initial actions look, well, not even your initial, all your actions look and model after God's own character, his own faithfulness. Let your actions model God's faithfulness as you move forward. David hears of the kindness shown of the Jabesh Gilead. The G keeps on moving for me. But he sees their kindness of giving Saul and his three sons a proper burial. They likely would have had to go and steal the bodies away from the Philistines who are probably parading them around town, excited about how they won. Their God won against the God of the Israelites in the war motif of the day. And so they go back, steal the bodies back, and they give them a proper burial. It took a lot of courage to do that, and it took a lot of loyalty to Saul to do that as well. Saul had delivered them from the Ammonites as his first act as king, according to 1 Samuel chapter 11, verses 1 through 13, and he kept them out of Philistine control, and so they were indebted to him. There was some kind of treaty between the two, and they, even at his passing, were loyal to him. Great amount of courage to do that, and David sees this and he responds to it the same kindness and faithfulness that God has given them to give them a king like Saul, that God has given them. I want to give you that kind of faithfulness as well. I want to offer you my own kindness, my own faithfulness back to you in a form of a treaty. So just like Saul was kind and patient with you and protective of you, I would like to offer myself is being kind and patient with you and protective of you. Just as God has been kind and patient with you and protective of you, I want to offer myself as the leader, the king that would be kind and patient and protective of you. Just as Saul was faithful to you, so will I be faithful to you. Just as God is faithful to you, so will I be faithful. Now, this might come as a little bit of a surprise. Well, Saul was the sworn enemy of David. And who knows, maybe David was involved in his murder. So here David's saying, no, I'm not going to come after you for doing this. I'm not going to retaliate against you for being so loyal to Saul. No, I want to let you know that I, in kind, will be kind to you as well. I appreciate your kindness to him, your faithfulness to him. I want to be kind and faithful to you if you'll be kind and faithful to me in a treaty. Now, just because in ancient times there was a treaty doesn't mean that when the king had a successor that that treaty would still be enacted. So it would not be out of the normal state of affairs for the new king to go, hey, can we come across a new agreement where you swear your allegiance to me like you swore your allegiance to my predecessor? And so here what we have is David doing that very thing. How about I fill the void here and ask if you will join me like you joined Saul? He gives them an encouragement to be strong and brave, and literally would be the idea, let your hands be strong, strengthen your hands, and become men of power and virtue is the idea. Move beyond your grief, understanding that the faithful God who gave you Saul has now given you me, who wants to be faithful to you as well. I've already been installed as king over Judah. I'd happily be installed as the king over Jabesh Gilead as well. He invites them into his service is what he's doing. So we see in unprecedented times, David seeks out the will of God, and then he acts in accordance with the will of God. He acts in accordance with God's character. I'm not going to be mean to you. I'm not going to retaliate against you. I want to let you know that I want to act kindly towards you. Now, this kind of gets blown up at the end of the chapter. We'll see that next week. But at least at the very beginning, he's saying, you know what? I'm seeking the will of God, and I'm offering you a treaty, the same kind of thing that you had with Saul. Which brings us to the big idea. That is to say that the pathway through, or the pathway out of uncertainty or times of uncertainty in life is best routed through godliness. The pathway out of uncertainty in life, the unprecedented times of life, is best routed through godliness. There are other paths, there are other ways you can get out of that, but the best one is always routed through godliness. The pathway out of the uncertainty of life is best routed through godliness. And I see that because we have this unprecedented situation in the history of Israel. They've never had a king, so they never had to succeed a king. Saul didn't exactly train up a successor, so clearly he was threatened by anybody who would position themselves to succeed him or to be the successor, the next king, and that's why David's on the run, because Saul's trying to kill him. Saul and his three legitimate sons are killed in battle, and David remembers that Samuel has anointed him as king some 15 years prior. What do I do? Is now the time. How about I consult God before I move on this? And how about I continue to model my actions after the heart of God in the midst of this? You know, I think there's so many things to unpack applicationally or application-wise from this passage. I think we hit unprecedented times in our life all the time. Do I commit the rest of my life to this person? Do I follow God when even my church friends act one way at church and act a different way on a high school campus? Just found out I'm going to be a mother, a father. I'm scared I'm going to mess this thing up. What do I do? My kids have walked away from the faith. I've raised them in the faith, and they've walked away from it. How do I respond? Pastor, what about my grandkids? I'm at a crossroads in my career. There are advantages and disadvantages or complexities on either side of this decision that's before me. Do I move to this other company? Do I move this other career path? How do I navigate? Well, you turn to God in prayer. You seek him out in the midst of this big decision. And as God directs your heart in the right direction, remember, delight yourself in the Lord and he will give you the desires of your heart, meaning he will change the desires to be in accordance with his desires. As he does that, set your North Star as the character of God in whatever you do. How would God's character look in this situation? That's what I'm going to be. That's what I'm going to embody. That's going to be my North Star. The pathway out of uncertainty in life is always best routed through godliness. Best routed through godliness. Tim Tebow was a man known as a powerful example of holding to his faith in the midst of the limelight. In 2010, Focus on the Family ran a Super Bowl commercial featuring Tim Tebow and his mother, Pam. It was about her decision to carry Tim to term against medical advice to abort. Both he and Focus on the Family came under a lot of criticism for that ad. In his playing days, he was heavily criticized because he would wear his faith on his sleeve. Always talking about God, always looking for ways to bring God into the picture in every interview that he had. Even went as far to put some certain messages on the eye black on his face. All of his friends were writing things on there, take a silver marker, doing this for mom, or whatever that might inspire them, and he decided he put a Bible verse on his eye black. When he hit the national championship game, he decided to change the verse that he was putting. There's a certain amount of time that he was putting a Philippians verse on there. This is, we can do all things through Christ who strengthens us. And he decided he was going to change that verse from Philippians to John 3:16. Had to go to his coach and tell him, not because the coach was any kind of adverse to any kind of religion, but more so because the coach was so superstitious that he couldn't believe he wanted to change the verse. We've been writing that verse for 2 years now. You can't change it now. It is God's strength that's enabled us. And he's like, no, I think on the national stage, I want to put John 3:16 because I think it matters more that people know how to become a child of God and be saved. His coach agreed with them, allowed him to change it. He won the national championship game. And 94 million people Googled John 3:16 that day. His historic college career would not be replicated in the NFL. Seems like the media enjoyed his downfall, being that he was such an outspoken Christian. He had one moment of an unprecedented achievement in the NFL, but it paled in comparison to the historic college career that he had at Florida, where he led a team to 2 national championships. His one unprecedented achievement in the NFL came in a playoff game when the Denver Broncos led an upset defeat over the Pittsburgh Steelers in comeback fashion. What's interesting is they asked him after the game about his stats. Of course, they always want to talk about stats. Do you know what the stats that he remembers from that game? He threw for 316 yards. As he says it, he had 3.16 yards per rush. Yards per completion, 31.6. Time of possession, 31.06. The ratings for the night of the game, 31.6 million people watched, as he had on his eye black, John 3:16. And during the game, 90 million people Googled John 3:16, the number one trending thing in all social media that day. God may not have had it for Tim Tebow to be a Hall of Fame quarterback in the NFL, but he did have it for him to be a great example of what it means to be a godly man in the midst of the limelight. And I can't promise you that if you try God on for size, that you'll get what you want in life. Like if you come here thinking, man, if I just give God a little bit, he'll give me a little bit. I can't promise you that. God is not a rabbit's foot. He's not a genie in a bottle that you rub. I can't promise you that. David waited 15 years to get what he wanted. 15 years. I can't promise you that. I won't promise you that. And I can't promise you that the uncertainty and the unprecedented situation maybe even brought you to church today will end in the exact manner that you've decided would be best. Can't do that either. But I can promise you that God knows what he's doing. He knows what he's doing. His ways are higher than yours. His ways are better than yours, even if your ways seem more efficient. Sometimes God allows us to go down a path, not because of the success of it, but because in the difficulty of it, he will prune our character in the process. And that might be his goal for that unprecedented situation. The pathway out of uncertainty in life is best routed through godliness. I promise you this, if you will put your foot solidly on God in whatever situation you're in, you will never regret that decision. I've just yet to see somebody regret that decision. Stand on his principles, stand on his word, stand on things that are according to his character. Seek him out and be shocked at how the path that you thought you were on is really this way, and God knew what he was doing the whole time. Why don't you pray with me? Father, I don't know who's in the room right now, and I don't know if they've been waiting on their 15 years, feeling like that you've given them a vision of who you want them to be and where you want them to go. And yet it's been 15 years and is now the time, and looks like all the stars are aligned right now. But instead we want to say, we want to seek you out. I used to have this beautiful prayer when I was 18, 19 years old. I'd rather have your will than my will. I don't want to be in a situation where I got my will, but it's not yours. I will shift my heart to your will. Just give me your will. Show me what it is. I want to live for you. That's what I want most. And in the process of the highs and lows, I will try my hardest to embody and model the character of God. And when I fall, will you pick me up? But I'm not living this life for myself. I'm living it for you. I want that number one. Father, would you bless the prayer of the heart of the individual in the room right now who is prayerfully asking you to lead them? And would you show them, maybe even surprisingly, which direction you're taking them as they rely on you and try to live out their life for you? We ask it in the name of Jesus. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Pastor David. You know, if you're new with us here today, maybe that illustration David just gave about Tim Tebow and John 3:16, maybe you're not even familiar with what that verse says. John 3:16 says, "For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish but will have eternal life." The path to the Lord is through Jesus Christ. The path to heaven and eternity is through Jesus Christ. That's the only way to get to God. The problem is we have sin in our lives. And the Bible says in Romans 3:23, "For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God." Everyone doesn't meet the mark to make it to heaven because of our sin. We have to deal with that. But God gave a way through his son's death on the cross to pay the penalty for my sin and for your sin, so that if we simply accept his offer to forgive us, he uses Jesus's death on the cross to pay our debt, so that when we stand before the Lord, he sees us as debt-free, that our debt's been paid for through his sacrifice instead of our life. So if you're here today and you haven't accepted Jesus Christ, you can do so today simply by trusting in the Lord and saying, "Yes, I need to be forgiven. Please forgive me of the sins of my life. I accept your offer to become one of your followers." And then you begin living for Jesus. If that's where you're at today, if you're ready to become a follower of Jesus, whether you're here in person or in line, if you would just let us know. If you're in person, you can go to the tent on the patio or to one of our prayer people at the conclusion of the service up front and just let them know what God's doing in your life. And if you're online, go to camcc.net and click on Next Steps. All right. We're going to shift gears and we're going to receive our offering. It's one of the ways we honor God and worship him. There's three ways to participate. I just want to say, if you are a text giver, that's one of the ways you can do it. Our five-digit text code is no longer. So the old thing I used to say about 84321, those are all going away. So we had to get rid of it. We have a regular phone number for that now. But if you just scan that QR code, it'll open your text app with the number already filled in. Or go to our website and you can see the instructions on how to reset up your text to give. Or if you accidentally text the old one, it'll reply to you from the new number. So you can't go wrong. All right. Let's check out this video. What's coming up next at KMCC?
Hey, KMCC, I'm David Leese, and I serve on the First Impressions team. If you're a guest today, welcome. Please go check out the new to KMCC tent to receive a $5 Starbucks gift card. If it's your second time, make sure you redeem your $10 In-N-Out gift card up to 10 as well. If you need a Bible, have questions about our church, decided to follow Jesus today, head on over to the tent. If you're watching online, go to camcc.net/next steps to go through the guest process. June 22nd, dinner in the park, 5 p.m. Families with young kids bring dinner for your family, a blanket, and a friend to join us at Valley Linda Park. For more info, connect with Chelsea at youngfamilies@camcc.net. June 24th, Women's Summer Bible Study. Join us for 8 Tuesdays from 7 to 8:30 as we go through the study, Flourish, here at KMCC. Register at camcc.net/women or email women@camcc.net for more info. August 6th through the 10th, middle school camp. Enjoy kayaking, swimming, archery tag, rope climbs, team competition, preaching, and much more at Sugar Pine Christian Camp. To register, go to camcc.net/middle school, and for more info, contact Jacob at camcc.net. If you need prayer today, we have our prayer team up front willing to pray for you at the conclusion of the gathering. To stay in the loop of what's going on at KMCC, check your email for our weekly newsletter, as well as follow us on Instagram, like us on Facebook, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. For more information on any of these events, go to camcc.net.
Good morning, KMCC. My name is David Hart. I've been privileged to call this my home church for over a decade now, and you've seen me probably on an occasional Sunday serve here on the worship team. I absolutely love this study through 2 Samuel. One thing David said early on about how King David failed to inquire of God at one point, and then this time he made it right and rectified that blunder by seeking God. And this, it just kind of made me think as a father and a husband, you know, entrusted by God to shepherd my family, that if I get it wrong, and I will get it wrong, and I failed in choir of God in leading my family, I can still come back later on and do it right. And there's grace for me in that time. And just like David was called a man after God's own heart, I can still be a father, a husband, a man after God's own heart in spite of that blunder. So that was super encouraging. I'd like to invite you to stand as we kind of wrap up our time together and we get prepared to send you guys out. Would love for you guys to stay. I don't know if you saw the stuff happening outside, but we've got an exciting fundraiser for the middle school program here. They've got Ninja Academy. They're hosting some really great obstacles and some fun stuff for the kids. Parents, heads up, there are QR codes posted around for a waiver that needs to be signed before the kids can jump in and have a great time. Just scan the QR code, fill it out online, super quick. Taco plates, $10, three tacos, rice and beans to fuel up those kids to just play hard and have a great time. But all the money goes to support our middle school ministry. Thank you guys for serving with us, for being here, for worshiping with us. Be blessed, talk to someone, and have a great afternoon.